Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. It can be said that a city is only as strong as its neighborhoods. For St. Louis, which is known as a city of neighborhoods, it's especially important to nurture them. That can be easier said than done, given the diverse nature and challenges confronting many neighborhoods. But it's no doubt safe to say that most residents want to improve or maintain what they have. The question is, how? I'm Don Marsh. Our subject today will address that as we discuss neighborhoods, how we can take what makes the ones that work and apply it to those that are struggling. During the course of the program, we'll hear from some residents about what's going on in their neighborhoods, and we'd like to hear your ideas on making neighborhoods work. Joining me to take on the subject are Liz Pund, Executive Director of the Schenker de Bolivar Community Council. Sean Thomas is Executive Director of the Old North Restoration Group, and Carl Gunther is Community Development Specialist at UMSL's Public Policy Research Center. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thanks, Don.
Thank you for having us.
Carl, let me begin with you and get the academic point of view before we turn to the neighborhood folks. What are the biggest challenges, as you see it, facing neighborhoods today?
Well, I mean, there's been a long-standing challenge for the older parts of our region where, you know, there's been residential flight, decreases in population, and that was, you know, general from, you know, all the places that have been built out since 1950. The professor I work with, Dr. Swanstrom, recently did a report on rebound neighborhoods, and the region's urbanized area from 1950 kind of took a little bit of a shot across the bow, especially since 1970. Those trends create some difficult situations for communities, but I do want to say that I think, you know, as we become more intentional about how we shape our neighborhoods and shape our communities, how we think about investing in them as a region, it can be hopeful, you know. And so I think one of the main things that we need to be dealing with and thinking about is sort of the community development system, the infrastructure that we create as a region and as its sub-geographies to support investment in our neighborhoods. So we could get more intentional, I think, about how we create policies that allow neighborhood organizations and neighborhood associations to gather people, develop plans for the future, and really be able to put some money and intellectual heft behind that. And, you know, we have some pieces in place, but for the most part, I think we still have a lot of opportunity out there.
These neighborhood groups are really important.
Yes. Oh, definitely. Foundational. Yeah. I mean, the ability for a community to organize, articulate a future for itself based on resident input, and have the staffing capacity or the volunteer capacity to create relationships with folks in government, folks in banks, folks in the foundation community is without a doubt foundational to improving neighborhoods.
Liz, let me turn to you and get some sense of what you think the challenges are, particularly for your area.
Sure. So the Schenker de Bolivar neighborhood is a neighborhood that's located in the city of St. Louis, north of Forest Park. And we are a very diverse historic neighborhood. And so some of the challenges that we have faced over the years, you know, have included a lot of the same issues that Carl was bringing up from, you know, the 60s and 70s, like a lot of redlining, blockbusting, white flight, and things that affected a large part of the St. Louis region. And, you know, since then, at that time, the neighbors came together with a lot of the local institutions to form the community council. And that has been a real asset to the neighborhood in terms of being able to do the things that Carl just mentioned about sort of articulating the vision, bringing things forward. And so now, you know, the challenges that a neighborhood like ours is facing involve a lot of keeping residents engaged and also finding the resources and the funding to be able to support the work that needs to be done, because the work of maintaining those relationships and really having a strong sort of source of support, getting the neighbors involved, it takes a lot of work.
Can you point to something specific that has, you would call, a major improvement over the last little while, whatever time frame that might be?
Oh, man. You know, in our neighborhood in particular, a big improvement that we've seen has been just in a lot of the strength of the housing and the relationships and just sort of that neighbor-to-neighbor communication strength within the neighborhood. It's something that keeps everybody together there, and it keeps us talking a lot. And so, in fact, we're using that now to develop a very forward-thinking vision, a master plan that we've been able to sort of come out of the sort of looking at the what's right in front of us and dealing with a lot of the issues that we're dealing with on a daily basis that a lot of us deal with, and we've been able to transition into pulling all of our relationships together and getting neighbors to talk about what they want to see for the future of the neighborhood as well.
Okay. Now, let's Sean, let's get your perspective on this.
Well, as you heard Carl talk about rebound neighborhoods, Old North is one that's still in the midst of its rebounding process. It's a neighborhood that went through decades of disinvestment and people moving away and properties collapsing. And then over the past 33 years, residents of the community have been working together through the Old North St. Louis Restoration Group to, as you've heard, articulate a vision of what they want their community to look like, but also to assemble all the pieces necessary to make it happen. And I think one of the greatest challenges for a neighborhood that is experiencing some positive development, especially if it has a history of some problems, is getting the word out to community members far outside of the neighborhood that there is an actual community of people who live here, people who care about the community, people who are enjoying their community. And it's a great place for business as well as for new residents. And we've succeeded with a lot of that, but there's still room to grow.
Did I call you Carl a moment ago? If so, I apologize.
I don't think so.
I may have, Sean.
That's right.
Set the location of your area for those in our audience who aren't familiar with it.
Old North is a specific neighborhood on the north side of the city. It's not everything that's old on the north side, but it's a specific neighborhood with Cass as the southern boundary all the way up to Branch Street. I-70 is the eastern boundary as it heads north and west from downtown, and then North Florissant is our western boundary. So if everybody has been to Crown Candy, and I think almost everybody in St. Louis seems like they have, Crown Candy Kitchen is the neighborhood institution that almost everybody knows.
And over the course of time, what sort of changes have you seen that have really been positive for you?
Well, I've been there 10 years, so I've seen some of the changes. But what I've seen over those 10 years has been a significant increase in population. The neighborhood showed a 28% increase in the 2010 census. And that was made possible by a lot of new housing development and investment. Our organization partnered with another nonprofit called Rise Community Development to actually build some new houses and to redevelop some vacant buildings to provide decent housing for a lot of residents, as well as to bring in some new people. But there have been a lot of businesses that have come into the neighborhood. Firecracker Press is one of the newest ones that is a set-up shop right on 14th Street. You asked earlier about the most amazing development in town. I think in Old North, certainly we would say the 14th Street Mall was a pedestrian mall that was a dead zone that has been redeveloped into a great mixed-use place with an open street now. And you can see the arch right downtown from Crown Candy's front door.
Is this, Carl, is this an exception rather than the rule, what we've just heard with regard to the Old North Side Restoration Group?
Well, I mean, they've been able to tackle some really big projects that, you know, because of the real estate downturn, probably has been more difficult to replicate some of the things that they've done. But nonetheless, I just want to point out, and Sean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Old North St. Louis Restoration Group has been around for over 30 years.
33 years,
mm-hmm. trying to bring together people, you know, face pressing issues as well as think about what they want to do in their neighborhood. And so these things don't happen overnight. So while I would say, you know, we might not have, you know, 10 or 12 examples of this happening throughout our region, but we've got three or four, you know, with Beyond Housing being able to build their grocery store and a new senior home. So there are places where large development has been able to take place. But most of the time, these stories and Liz's story and Skinker to Bolivar, these are stories that take place over 20, 30, 50 years.
Yeah, it does take time, as you indicated. Liz, that we just heard from Sean that the population has increased in his area. How about yours?
The population in our area actually has increased since you know, sort of the downturn, we'll say back in the mid-century area, we're definitely coming back up to a stage where our neighborhood has a lot less vacant property than it used to have, and the buildings are getting renovated, and we're seeing that fill in. But the thing I'd say about Skinker to Bolivar is that we have, in a lot of ways, because the neighbors and stakeholders came together back when this was starting to take place in the 60s, in a lot of ways, our population has... we didn't quite see the same abandonment that we've seen in other parts of the city. And so we are still a very diverse neighborhood in a lot of different ways. And the things that we're seeing now are a lot of new families coming in, more students coming in. Washington University is right next door to us. And so a lot of the buildings and housing that used to maybe go more toward families or older residents are now coming in toward the younger population.
Carl?
And, yeah, I just want to add, you know, I mean, one of the interesting things about a lot of the older neighborhoods and communities in our region is that they might not have brought back all of their population, but they have been either transitioning home, you know, that maybe were a two-family into a single-family home. And so I think one of the maybe more short-term or intermediate data points to look at is occupancy rates, and that there are people who are taking ownership and caring for parcels of land that maybe weren't before.
Yeah, and the idea of people coming back and increasing the population of these neighborhoods is really counterintuitive to what we've been hearing about the population decline in the city.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, there are places where population is coming back. There's places where maybe it's stabilizing, mm-hmm. which is good. And there's places where, like I said, the occupancy rate or, you know, the number of households and units actually being lived in and taken responsibility for has increased, which is very important.
Liz, go ahead.
Yeah, if I can add something to that. Something that we've seen in our neighborhood is an increased desire for a sustainable urban lifestyle. And that is something that city neighborhoods can provide that perhaps moving farther out into the suburbs, it's harder to do. You know, a lot of people moving into our neighborhood say they come in because we have access to three different Metrolink stations, number of bus lines run through the neighborhood. It's a very walkable place. And a lot of the energy that the council and that the neighbors are working on is toward driving that even farther and really being able to have a really car optional, sustainable lifestyle.
And while we're talking about population, I'd like to point out that Thursday on this program, we're going to be having an interesting exercise involving Mayor Slay and some others with regard to what would this city be like if the population all of a sudden were 500,000. When you begin to think of it in those terms, there are a lot of exciting things you can come up with, and it may be a good long while before we can get to that point, but this should be an interesting discussion, and we'll be having that on Thursday. We'll come back and continue this conversation about neighborhoods, what makes them work, and how we can make them better. Our guests in studio are Liz Pund, Executive Director of the Skinker to Bolivar Community Council, Sean Thomas is Executive Director of the Old North Restoration Group, and Carl Gunther is with us, Community Development Specialist at UMSL's Public Policy Research Center. The conversation will continue in just a moment. We'd like to get you into it. What ideas do you have for making neighborhoods better? Let us know at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@sdlpublicradio.org. If you prefer to send us a tweet, we'll take that too at SDL On Air. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis On the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We will be continuing our conversation on neighborhoods in the St. Louis region in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. The St. Louis Board of Aldermen has approved legislation allowing for a twice-a-year music festival to be held in downtown St. Louis. Illinois gas station owners are speaking out today against proposals for a fuel tax hike being floated in Springfield. Retail gas station leaders will announce their opposition to such a plan at a news conference this afternoon at the state capitol. They say increasing the gas tax in a tough economy would hurt drivers and business owners. And U.S. Senator Mark Kirk of Illinois visited Boeing's defense facility in St. Louis this morning. He says he plans to urge Congress to authorize and appropriate funds for the EA-18G Growler fighter jet, which is built here in St. Louis. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation about neighborhoods. With me in studio, Carl Gunther, Community Development Specialist at UMSL's Public Policy Research Center. Liz Pund is Executive Director of the Skinker to Bolivar Community Council. And Sean Thomas, also with us, Executive Director of the Old North Restoration Group. And Carl Carol, back to you. You said during the break there something that was very interesting with regard to what it really takes to get people back. Repeat that for our listeners.
Yeah, so we were just talking during the break about population gains and just how important neighborhoods are to that equation. Neighborhoods are, the places where we can attract people who, we can offer people a quality of life. And so as we think about redeveloping our neighborhoods, as we think about building strong places where people can live, it's one of our best assets and one of the best cards in our pocket to play when we're trying to attract people to our region, trying to attract people, into anywhere, whether it's a suburb or in the city. We want to be able to offer great places for people to live. And more often than not, people who come and visit St. Louis, if we can show them great neighborhoods, places where, like Liz said, you can walk around, you can get to restaurants, you've got amenities, you've got school options, you've got transportation options. It's one of the better leverage points we've got.
Sean, school options just popped out at me here because that's one of the things you hear most about St. Louis, that the school system is not that highly regarded by many people, and that inhibits growth.
That is a challenge, and that's something that people raise to us all the time as one of the reasons people may not choose the city. On the other hand, I think there are a lot of options that people have today that they didn't used to have 10 years ago or didn't have 20 years ago. We did a survey of residents in the neighborhood, and out of 51 households that were talked to, there were 42 different schools represented.
Oh, wow.
You can see that as a sign that something is not working, that people have to scramble in multiple ways, or you could say that's a sign that something is filling the void there, that there are options of charter schools or different magnet schools or the DSEG program perhaps or parochial schools.
Well, how does an organization like yours approach that particular problem?
Well, in a lot of ways, the best thing we can do is share information about what other neighbors have utilized for their schooling and to try to engage the schools that are in the area in as much as possible a conversation about what they need to succeed and what we can do to help them with that, as well as the families, asking them, what are your desirable educational circumstances that you want us to try to help with? So it might be after-school programming that's not connected to a specific school, but it also might be just helping them arrange carpools.
Right. Liz, what about adjacent neighborhoods? I mean, obviously, for your neighborhood to work, people have to feel safe and comfortable with what's around their neighborhood. How do you deal with that? How do you work with adjacent neighborhoods?
So working with adjacent neighborhoods is becoming a big focus of the work that the Community Council does. Obviously, we can draw neighborhood boundaries. The city has official boundaries for how neighborhoods are in the city of St. Louis and any city, but the reality is that we experience the area around us in a very different way, and so we understand that and really try to approach the neighborhoods around us with sort of a very open and listening attitude, reaching out across those borders to say, what is going on where you are? How can we be of support to them? Find out and share information and get to know the residents on both sides, especially, for example, Del Mar is our northern border and the West End is right above us. And so we all share the sort of impact that Del Mar has on us. And so being able to connect with them and work with them is really important to the work that we do.
Sean, same sort of approach?
Very much. We try to engage the other neighborhood groups that are in the other areas as much as possible on what we have going on and ways that we can work with them on promoting their events and activities. We certainly don't want Old North to be an island unto itself. We want to have good relationships with the area.
We've talked to a number of residents in various parts of the city over the last couple of days with regard to this program and how what the issues are that they feel are important. I'd like to listen to one of those now and get a reaction to it. This is Dorothy, who has lived in the Penrose neighborhood for over 50 years, and safety is her issue.
I've been asked by my children to move, that they felt that the neighborhood was not safe anymore. And my thoughts about that is that I don't think any neighborhood is completely safe anymore. There might be better neighborhoods, better landscape, whatever, but no neighborhood is 100% secure anymore, and you just have to step out on faith and understand that you just can't keep running and moving and changing. You have to take a stand. Our neighborhood, we have a block unit, and our neighborhood has united together to sort of watch out for each other and to do things. We have meetings to try to adjust the situation in the neighborhood. Despite all of the things that have happened, I'm proud of my neighborhood. And I think a lot of people should be proud of their neighborhood. The pride is what makes you want to work and make your neighborhood better. You know, I mean, you can get up and move and go to a different neighborhood, but what about just taking a stand and saying that this is my neighborhood, and whatever I can do to make it better, I'll be committed to trying to make it better.
Liz, let me get your reaction to that.
I think that her commitment and hard work is amazing, and that that is what it takes. It is a very long game in a lot of cases to take the place where you're living and you want it to be better. It takes a lot of work between the residents to build those relationships and come together and then be able to move it forward. And in fact, when you're talking about safety and security, and if you feel safe in your own streets, knowing your neighbors and knowing your neighbor's neighbors and those streets near you can go a long way toward improving safety. And it also, you know, I think it's great she's working with her block unit to bring people together and then be able to connect with the services and entities in the city that are here to help them, you know, whether that's the police or and or even going to more, you know, future thinking lengths around looking at can you increase lighting in the neighborhood or develop a business district or something like that.
Sean, what do you think?
Well, I would agree with what Liz just said. Three things occurred to me when I heard Dorothy is one that every neighborhood would love to have a lot of Dorothys. She's doing everything right there. She is standing her ground and standing up for her community, but she's also working with neighbors. But the third point is that a lot of times safety is a matter of perception, and many neighborhoods are a lot safer than people realize. There is an assumption from outsiders and even some former neighbors that things might be worse than they are, especially if they see the news and the news brands the entire North Side, for instance, as one neighborhood. And the reality is that there are distinct neighborhoods on the North Side, just as there are distinct neighborhoods on the South Side. And Old North, for instance, we've had a 22% decrease in crime over the past year alone. And that was already coming from a level that was much lower than a lot of other neighborhoods. But people assume things because they don't know the whole facts.
Carl, it doesn't help to have a city labeled most dangerous city and that sort of thing, which happens from time to time.
No, it does not. You know, and it's sad that I think, you know, one of the key principles in community development, community building is that every neighborhood is its own. It's got its own dynamics, has its own life story. It's got its own set of residents, own hopes, you know. And, you know, when you have a blanket statement like that, it washes over the diversity and the uniqueness of the communities that we actually do have. So very detrimental.
One neighborhood that definitely has its own personality is down in and around Cherokee Street. I think most people can identify with that area one way or another. We have another one of our respondents, Randy, who talked. He has a business down on Cherokee Street, and he talks about something that you guys have talked about. So let's listen to Randy.
In contrast to a lot of urban neighborhoods in St. Louis and even around the country, Cherokee Street is revitalizing in a uniquely organic way, meaning there's no real master plan or singular vision for its rebirth, no single developer or group of developers really leading the charge. It's more of a collaborative effort on behalf of the grassroots community, longtime residents, new residents, business owners, immigrants, people who are just really digging their heels in, recognizing the incredible fabric that exists there, the incredible potential, and working in a very cohesive way, block by block, building by building, storefront by storefront, to really bring the neighborhood up to its potential.
Sean, your reaction to that?
Well, first, I think we all know Randy and his brother Jeff, and they're great anchors on Cherokee. And I agree that it takes neighbors working together. It may or may not have a strategic plan, or it may or may not have a big development plan for the community, but if the neighbors are working together, that's the foundation. I do personally think having a strategic plan and a cohesive vision is important, but it really has to start with the community.
And then you have to sell the plan, and you have to have everybody on board and working in concert with you.
Well, and you can't always get everyone on board. In fact, I would say it's virtually impossible to have everyone on board, but you can work together so that you at least are open about the process.
And Liz, those that don't climb on board, what do you do about them?
Oh, I mean, it's hard to say. The thing that, I don't know, the approach that I take with it is that there are going to be every opinion under the sun, you know, for any topic you have, especially in a neighborhood as large as a neighborhood in the city of St. Louis. You know, Skinker de Bolivar has around 3,500 to 4,000 people in it, so we're never going to be able to please everyone. But by being open to the dialogue and providing the forum for everyone to come and be heard and have their thoughts be heard, and also to do it in the context of, you know, we've been working on our own master plan as well that's about to finish. It's been about a year and a half long public engagement process. Having a forum in which to do that has been huge toward just collecting all those opinions and then parsing them and being able to make a decision that's going to be able to be best for the neighborhood, and hope that even though we might not make the decision always that is in line with what everybody wants, that through the process they will be able to get on board and get behind what's going to be best for the neighborhood in the long term.
Carl?
Yeah, and I think the key thing here is process, right? That people know that there is a clear laid out path to kind of coming to a decision, and that people are able to engage in them. And, you know, hopefully good community development practitioners, they're going to be looking at, you know, I mean, making sure that resident voice from different segments of the neighborhood are there, whether it's homeowners, renters, business owners, people of different genders, different races, different economic classes. So you're really trying to make sure that everyone has the opportunity and option to participate if they're passionate about it, and actively seeking out that participation. And then when you get to a certain point, maybe not everybody's able to fully agree, but if you can get to a point where a lot of residents accept the vision, you know, so it may not have been your top choice, but I can get behind that. I understand. I was hearing the conversations. I think we should move forward. So sometimes I think getting to acceptance is a very important place.
Did you want to say something, Liz? Oh, another thing that I heard in Randy's comments, we talked about immigrants and what they can bring to a community. We've done a number of programs here on immigrants and refugees coming into. Actually, they're trying to recruit and solicit them in St. Louis because they bring the entrepreneurial skills, mm-hmm. and they bring a dynamic to a neighborhood that otherwise might not be there but can be inspirational to others. Sean, you're nodding like crazy.
Yeah. In fact, if you look at other cities in the country that have succeeded and grown, those are cities that have put out the welcome mat for people from all over the place. I think that's true on a neighborhood-by-neighborhood basis as well. If you look at places that are welcoming and friendly and hospitable, those grow and people feel like they can become a part of the community a lot easier if you are welcoming like that.
Any other thoughts before we move along on that? All right, we have a couple of emails here that we'll get some response to. Jack writes, why does gentrification seem to be a negative process for rebuilding a community? Go ahead, Carl.
Gentrification is a really, that's a term that comes with a lot of emotion for a lot of people. And I think that the reason why it can seem to be a bad thing is the fundamental principle that people who have been dedicated to a place would hopefully get to participate in and bear the fruit of its success later on. And so the trick is, how do you improve neighborhoods while also retaining those who have stuck it out and been able to fight the good fight and be a part of the community coming back, like Dorothy. And so in situations like St. Louis has, we do actually have the opportunity to try to improve our neighborhood while retaining the long-term residents because of how much population we did see. So I think, you know, St. Louis is in a position where we can actually respect long-term residents and improve our communities.
Here's another issue brought up in an email from Robert. A developer recently bought three properties next to me in Benton Park. Two of them were beyond rehabilitation and were demolished. Why does the city allow owners of vacant properties to let them deteriorate until they are beyond rehabbing? I don't think anyone here can speak for the city, but I imagine rehabbing and vacant properties are an issue for all of you.
Well, Sean? I think it does deserve acknowledgement that it's very costly to rehab some properties after they've been sitting empty for generations sometimes. There are resources out there, and that's where I would certainly get on the soapbox and argue that historic rehab tax credits are an important resource, virtually any other resource to help preserve our character and the architectural integrity of the neighborhoods would be worth supporting. But neighborhoods need outside developers to come in, as well as neighborhood residents to invest in their property. And as much support as anybody who tries to do that, as we can garner, is important. But it's also important to hold people accountable for their properties. I agree with that.
Yeah. We have someone on the phone, I think, who would like to be involved in rehabbing and development. Let's bring in Rick. He's calling from Illinois. Rick, go ahead with your question or comment, please.
I grew up in North St. Louis in Baden. You know, a lot of people I knew moved out of that area. And, you know, I think the old neighborhoods are just wonderful. You know, some of the neighborhoods over in Illinois kind of resemble the old kind of Baden type neighborhoods. But how would I've got 38 years of construction, residential construction experience and construction management. I'm semi-retired. How would I get involved in something like that with you guys?
I think we all might fight over trying to get him to our respective areas, but most neighborhood-based groups do have information about what properties are available and can connect people to either resources or supporters who might want to help make that happen.
Is there a website of some sort that you could lead people to? Because we'll put it on ours at stlpublicradio.org if you have.
Well, I was just going to say the Community Builders Network of Metro St. Louis, which Skinker DeBot, Liz, and Sean are both a part of, there's a directory page on there where people can click and see a map of where organizations are, and it should have the contact information for the executive director. I realize we need to get Liz's information up there. She just took over this year at Skinker DeBot of our community corporation. But that's also one of the benefits of having an organized neighborhood, whether it's via your neighborhood association or a staffed nonprofit, is that folks can call and say, I have the skill set, I would like to get involved, I could do something. And you can actually, you know, try to build that relationship and work on it. If he's interested in going back to Baden, Riverview West Florissant Community Development is up there. Tony Cousins is the executive director.
We'll get that information on our website, as I said, stlpublicradio.org. You just heard from Carl Gunther, Community Development Specialist at UMSL's Public Policy Research Center. He's with me in studio, as are Liz Pund, Executive Director of the Skinker DeBolivar Community Council, and Sean Thomas, also with us, Executive Director of the Old North Restoration Group. We'll take another break and come back and continue with this conversation on neighborhoods, maintaining them and developing them in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation on neighborhoods and neighborhood development, maintaining them, making good ones better, and making ones that aren't so good even better yet. What sort of resources are out there and available to organizations like yours, Liz, in terms of, you know, maintaining what you're doing and getting the word out, marketing, communicating, that sort of thing?
Sure. So we are a staffed organization, so we receive funding from a variety of places that actually provide the dollars that we need to pay for the staff, rent the office, and we get a portion of that from the Community Development Administration from the City of St. Louis, and that is money that is funded by the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development. Another significant portion of our funding comes from our institutional partners. So we have a lot of churches in the neighborhood, Washington University, Pulaski Bank. They contribute to supporting the neighborhood where they have a stake in what's going on.
It's in their best interest to be active and a part of that.
Absolutely,
obviously.
And they were founding members of our organization in the first place.
Yeah.
And then our neighbors are one of our most important resources, both on the financial side, but also in terms of just skills and time and, you know, ideas that, you know, they are our number one resource in my mind, that it is their neighborhood and we are there to facilitate it becoming what it is they want it to be, and having them at the table to give us their ideas, but also they do a lot of the work around. In fact, we just went through a rebranding initiative over the last year or so, and that was entirely driven by residents. We've got some great people in the neighborhood who have great design skills, you know, bring them to the table. We do that with a lot of the work that we do.
When do you expect to have your master plan completed?
Later this spring.
All right.
Very close.
Looking forward to that. Sean, I imagine you're probably going to say essentially the same thing.
Most of the same thing, although I also would mention that our organization relies on support, and we are glad to be part of the Community Builders Network. Carl has mentioned that already, but that does bring together groups throughout the city and beyond the city limits to share ideas and build support for each other.
Carl?
And I just also, too, I mean, a lot of the groups also work with RISE, which Sean mentioned earlier. They've got tremendous expertise on kind of how to finance community development stuff. And then, too, if you're a neighborhood association, the St. Louis Association for Community Organizations is rebuilding, and they're an asset and kind of a support network for that group.
Sean, obviously you want more assets to come into a community business, as we've talked about earlier. How do you go about attracting them? What does your organization do to bring in new business?
Well, it's a comprehensive approach. There's no single thing, but clearly having information on our website where anybody from anywhere can access that and find out a little bit about the community. We do try to promote all the positive aspects of the community through community events, by bringing residents together, by providing them with resources and tools to take to their employer or to any organization outside of the community that they're part of. And we have things like our annual house and community tour, so people can come in and see the neighborhood. That's coming up May 17th, by the way, as a quick plug for that one. We invite anybody who wants to come see it. But our office itself is a resource center for people who want to stop in. If they're down at Crown Candy, happen to be wandering down the street to look around, and they just decide they want to find out what's available for properties to rehab or where businesses could set up shop, we try to provide a one-stop shop for all that information.
That's the second time you've mentioned Crown Candy at lunchtime. My stomach is beginning to growl.
You're all welcome to join me there.
As a result. Liz, how about learning from other community organizations? Is there some sort of a network or some sort of an ability to learn what's working in one place and not working in another that you can use?
Absolutely. I mean, the Community Builders Network is our go-to resource for that. We get together with the other organizations that are working not only across St. Louis City, but St. Louis County, and I think even in the Metro East, on a regular basis to talk about things like organizational capacity or civic capacity building, and really being able to talk about what it is that is working in their neighborhoods. And when I have an issue, I know who I can go to bounce some ideas off of them. But I think that type of information sharing in my development has been huge, and I know that the Skinker to Bolivar Community Council has benefited a lot through having those relationships with other groups doing the same type of work in St. Louis. And the Community Builders Network has, in just the last couple of years, done a lot to bring us all together and have a really strong network of professionals and volunteers who are really passionate about improving their neighborhoods.
Well, one of the best-known neighborhoods in the city of St. Louis is the Lafayette Square area. And a lot of people have worked very, very hard for a long time to make that area work. Let's find out from Judy what has been going on there that does make it work.
I have a very strong sense of community and long-term ownership. People come and they like it and they stay. We also have common goals. So we're showing off history and what history looked like in both architecture and the stories of the neighborhood. The challenges are how to keep it a fair mix, probably between commercial and residential. That isn't the biggest challenge we've ever faced, because there seems to be such a demand for residential that I think that folks will keep producing those homes.
And that is from Judy. Residential is a key word. I mean, that's key to everything. You need business and need all the support, but you've got to have people with places to live, Carl.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, when companies are looking at where to locate and other things, I mean, there's got to be a reality to the number of people living there and the amount of money they can spend. But, I mean, there's been really neat studies. Eleanor Tutt from RISE and Stephen Acree and some other partners a few years ago did this social compact study to understand how much leakage there was out of different neighborhoods throughout the city and North County. And so it kind of helps paint that picture of what is kind of maybe the residential or the per capita spending available in certain places and how much could be recaptured for business.
But I think a key point Judy made was about the sense of community. You can have beautiful housing stock, and if people don't have relationships with each other, it's not worth staying, or they won't stay. So they do have to have that community.
And there was another word that popped up in one of our earlier respondents to us, and that was the word pride. And that goes hand in hand with maintaining everything. Right, Liz?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the things that makes Skinker to Bolivar special in the way that it is that a lot of the neighbors and residents there have lived there for 20, 30, 40 years, 50 mm-hmm. years even, and some of them are second or third generation residents who grew up there and decided to come back. And the way that so many of the neighbors I know will go out and try to recruit new neighbors to come into the neighborhood, I think, is just fantastic. And it says a lot about, I guess, the work that's been done there and the pride that everyone has.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to, third thing that she mentioned that I think is really crucial that gets over, like, this kind of shared goals that she mentioned. I think, you know, on the academic side, people talk about kind of collective efficacy, residents' ability to come together and achieve something together, or kind of have sort of a consistent set of, you know, social constructs that people want to participate in. And, you know, I think having relationships that keep people in a place, having shared expectations, shared goals. I mean, she sort of laid that out as someone who lives there and feels those connections that keep people coming back to a place.
Well, we have a comment here from Tom that I'll read. Someone must name the elephant in the living room, Paul McKee. Since you have mentioned gentrification, it will seem strange if you go around that controversy rather than addressing it. Sean, I'll throw this one at you because I know that your approach to Mr. McKee may not be in line with everybody else's. What do you think?
Well, the reality is that his development area extends just west of Old North, so he does have property scattered throughout Old North, but his redevelopment plan area is a large chunk of North City, and it starts just west of North Florissant and overlaps a little bit at the southern edge. Our organization's approach has been that as long as he has properties within the neighborhood, we still want to engage him in a conversation about what can happen with those properties. And frankly, we'd like to see his plan succeed, like to see something happen with the areas outside of Old North's boundaries. That would be good for everybody.
Right. Carl, let me get your take on the McKee project. I mean, this is a neighborhood squared, really.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a very big area, and there's you know, there are community groups up there that he could partner with. I think what the whole process has kind of spoken to me about, you know, the whole show today has come up, you know, community engagement process, community development processes that allow people to, when you're working in a place that has already been built, right? This isn't a development of like a greensfield or something, you know. The process matters tremendously. And to be able to get people involved and to understand the needs and wants of residents that live there and how that will mesh with some sort of future vision is crucial. And you can see kind of the battles that have been waged over this over the last 3 years in court and stuff. So, you know, we'll see what comes of it. But I think it illustrates why community development process is so important.
And communication. Liz, you brought this up in the past. That seems to be part of the problem in this miscommunication, if that's what it's called, between Mr. McKee and some of the people who are wondering really what he's up to.
Yeah, and I think communication in a neighborhood is a huge challenge, whether you're a developer coming in or a neighborhood organization like ours trying to do work. It's a lot of people to get in touch with and a lot of different stakeholders that you need to be reaching out to. And I think, honestly, the work that groups like ours do is try to be sort of the funnel point where we know a lot of the people that we're working in the neighborhood. We know who to reach out to. We can help facilitate those types of connections. But it's a constant ongoing fight there to figure out who's around, who do we need to bring in.
Let's talk about or hear from another neighborhood in St. Louis. That would be Dutchtown. Maude is going to join us now. We had recorded this earlier, and get her take on what makes Dutchtown work.
The thing that drew me to the neighborhood was the amazing historic architecture. There's just great housing stock for really good prices, and there are a lot of new immigrants that live in Dutchtown, and so it was really adding to a renaissance and vitality in the neighborhood.
Do you see some challenges facing your neighborhood?
One of the biggest issues that Dutchtown faces right now is pretty much repeated across many regions of St. Louis, and it really comes down to poverty and access to education. That's really the heart of any problem that a neighborhood is facing.
Let me follow up on that with an email we have from Christine, who writes, I have a question about neighborhood organizations. There seems to be an emphasis on maintaining property values for homeowners and businesses. This makes sense, but seems to end up excluding renters, especially lower-income renters, as welcome participants in the neighborhood. What are some ways that renters might be made more welcome by neighborhood organizations? Liz, I'll throw that one your way.
Well, to address Christine's comment, we love getting involvement from renters, and a good portion of the Skinker-Bolivar neighborhood is made up of folks renting homes or apartments. The difficulty that we have, in fact, is in reaching those renters because they turn over more quickly. So you're in there for a year or two, you might move out again. And we maintain our own email list, we maintain our own contact list, we do our best to get out there and find out. But in general, renters tend to be less engaged and less connected. So we would love them.
Same.
And we try to hold as many events as possible that are community-wide events to welcome everybody. And when you show up at the farmer's market, nobody knows whether you're a homeowner or a renter if you're buying a head of lettuce from a vendor. So as many fun community events where we can build those relationships across whatever distinction there might be helps build community.
Do you make any kind of distinction, Carl, in renters and other residents?
Yeah. I mean, the only distinction I would make is that it you need to intentionally make sure that you're reaching the different populations. If you exclude renters, it'll be to the neighborhood's peril, I think. It bringing everyone together, creating a space where people can experience the community, bring their talents and skills, get involved. That renter may become a homeowner. They may stay a renter forever. They may move on to another neighborhood and speak very well of their former neighborhood. All of that's good, but it requires keep that door open and keep hoping that people come.
Maud mentioned specifically architecture, and it seems to me that St. Louis, one of its great assets is its architecture. Would you agree?
Oh, definitely. We have some of the most phenomenal architecture anywhere. And the interesting thing is how much our housing stock has been a massive asset in the neighborhoods that have been able to come back. Which makes things like what Sean's done on the North Side and other North Side communities who have started to make use of historic rehab and everything so important. Once it's gone, it's very hard to get back. So it's played a central role in a lot of neighborhoods.
Liz, certainly important in your neighborhood.
Oh, absolutely. Skinker to Bolivar, if you drive around, you'll notice all the century homes that make up the neighborhood. And we, in fact, have a historic district that was formed in the 1970s to help, protect the historic character of the neighborhood.
Is that a magnet for newcomers? The architecture?
Oh, absolutely. I know, me too. I'm a young professional, and I love being able to walk down the street and see these gorgeous homes, the brick homes.
How about, Sean, in your neck of the woods?
Oh, definitely. In fact, 33 years ago, when the organization was established by residents in the neighborhood, they made it a key point that one of the foundation pieces for their revitalization was to preserve the character of the neighborhood. That is something that, if you look at neighborhoods that are really bottomed out and aren't doing well, those are areas where they bulldozed the whole history.
Yeah. You know, I guess the joke in St. Louis is architecture is great as long as you don't mind it being made out of brick. There's certainly plenty of that around. You know, the last respondent, Maud calling from Dutchtown, again talked about immigrants. We have an email from Dick Fleming, whom you'll remember as the former head of the Regional Chamber and Growth Association. He writes, given the importance of immigrants to city and neighborhood revitalization, it's sad to see on the front page of the Post-Dispatch this morning that Missouri legislators have taken one more regressive step to discourage immigrants from moving or staying in St. Louis and Missouri at this time, with the penalty for immigrants pursuing higher education in Missouri. That's what the story was all about. What about our statewide politicians and the help they would give to neighborhoods in a place like St. Louis? Is this something you want to get into? Carl, you look ready to go.
I just want to say it's a really important issue. I think, a lot of the low-income housing tax credit, historic tax credits, are being debated, and we'll see whether or not what legislation actually makes its way through. But these have been tools that have been very, very important to our region's communities and as well to outstate Missouri. There is an organization, the Missouri Workforce Housing Association, that has been engaging folks across the state and kind of rallying behind this stuff. But a lot of what is done in rural areas and in urban areas can sometimes only be done with these policies in place. So it's one of those things. And I think, too, just being able to recognize that these things are not just for urban or rural, and that when different parts of the state succeed, the whole state succeeds. So. Yeah.
Only have about a minute left, and I'm going to ask Sean and Liz very, very quickly your best advice to neighborhoods where they want to get something going, but it hasn't started yet. In 30 seconds, tell me what your advice is.
I would just say start with the people who live there and bring them together to engage them in conversation about what they want their community to be, and then build on the assets of that community, whether it's the architecture or whether it's a great neighborhood landmark business or just the vitality of the residents there.
Start with one thing and then build on that. Is that
right?
What you're saying?
As long as that one thing is something the community embraces.
Yeah. Liz, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, building on what Sean just said, the idea of being able to work together and bring different parties to the table and work through those hard discussions. You might not agree on everything, but being able to have those hard discussions and really be present in those as an entity, as one unit, it will take you very far.
All right. Do you want to give us a 10-second synopsis?
Yeah, well, I would just say, you know, I mean, these are crucial ingredients, and if you can address your situations through looking at the amenities and opportunities that you already have in your community.
Plenty of food for thought in today's program. Carl Gunther, thank you so much for being with us. Sean Thomas, great to see you. Thank you for being with us. Liz Pun, thank you for being with us. Today's show is informed by people in our Public Insight Network. Tell us what your interests are, and you could be featured in an upcoming broadcast of this program. Visit stlpublicradio.org to sign up for this free service. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about climate change, just after a UN panel released a new report saying major action is needed to curb greenhouse gas emissions. We'll also hear personal stories of some St. Louis residents and their interaction with climate change. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.